Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Well, hello and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. My guest tonight enjoys spreading love one story at a time. She's been fascinated by fairy tales and folk tales ever since she was young, and like me, has always ended her stories with a happy ever after. She's a hybrid author that writes in many genres, historical romance ranging from gritty westerns to the 1920s to contemporary romance with military heroes, romantic suspense, fairy tale romance, and paranormal romances. Damsel in distress stories are some of her favorites, and you'll find this theme in many of her stories. Her work as a travel consultant gave her the opportunity to visit many countries, and her luggage often carried home folk tales from the countries that she visited. Deborah writes full-time and runs her own publishing company, Bellodia Publishing. Please welcome Deborah Parmley to the show. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Sheila. Thanks for this interview. It's going to be fun switching sides on the microphone and being interviewed this time.
Now, did I say that? Is it Bellodia or Bellodia?
It's Bellodia. Yes, Bellodia
Publishing.
I got
it right.
I get
extra points. Yeah, I get extra points for that. it's a pleasure to have you. It's a pleasure to have you with me tonight. You know, we chatted on the phone and over email, and you know, we've both talked. We both do talk shows for Readers Entertainment. Which we'll chat about in just a little bit. But I was clueless you had so many varied interests and talents, and I know we talked a little bit about that before we get started. And of course, I'm really interested to learn more. Yeah, let's start off with filling guests in on kind of what catapulted you into writing, and then we'll get into some of the other exciting things that you do shortly.
All right. I've been making up stories and poems in my head ever since I was a little girl, so I can't really remember a time when I didn't do those things, but I didn't pursue publication with any sort of serious drive until I wrote my first novel, and that came about because of a challenge that I just couldn't pass up. I was out at the Ozark Creative Writers Weekend in Arkansas when Dusty Richards, who is a Western novelist, challenged us to write our first novel, to make it a Western, and if we won his contest, his agent would read the entire manuscript. Well, that was too good to pass up, so I wrote one, but by the time the contest was up the next year, he no longer had his agent. He did sit with me and go over the beginning of the story. By the time I finished that story, I discovered that the Western I was writing was a romance, which was a solid clue that no matter what I start out writing, it will turn into a romance. And that first book, yes, that first book, A Desperate Journey, was later in the American Title II contest, and I landed an agent, and then a book contract with Sam Hain Publishing came a year later. And that was way back in 2008, before self-publishing and indie presses.
And my, how time has flown and how things are different. Now, your latest novel, Checkout, centers on veteran Nash Ware and a shy librarian, Betsy Bobbin. Love the name, by the way. can you tell listeners more about your characters?
Sure. Betsy Bobbin is a shy librarian who spends most of her spare time reading books. And she's the middle child of three sisters. And she's a family-focused woman who fusses over her younger sister, Leanne, as a result of them losing their parents before Leanne was out of high school. Leanne is in college, and she has some growing up to do still. And Nash Ware is a Marine veteran who came back from active duty with an eye patch, a scar, and PTSD. He spends his time going to college and working on healing the headaches that he gets and controlling his PTSD. He's also restoring a 2003 anniversary edition Harley, and he goes to the gym and to the bar with his buddies. So Betsy isn't the type of woman he'd bump into with his schedule, but he goes into the library on a stormy winter night to get some books, and there she is, and it's love at first sight.
I love it. I love it. See, anybody, any walk of life, the library is the place to go. I'm just putting that out into the world. Now, without giving too much away, can you tell us about kind of maybe a tense moment for these two and how they're able to overcome it?
Yes. There is a scene early in the book outside a country western bar where Betsy and Leanne went to go country line dancing. And a man that Leanne was drunkenly dirty dancing with follows them out and grabs Leanne in the parking lot. Nash happens to be there, and the way he handles things scares Betsy. So she goes back and forth, not sure whether she can be with Nash or not. But the bottom line is that it's the second time Nash has come to the rescue. And the real danger is the stalker who's after Leanne. But you're going to have to read the story to find out more about what he does.
You're a tease. You're a tease.
Yes.
All right. Now, you write in many, many genres. You know, I discovered that some publishers, they don't like you to write outside of the genre that you're well known for. So when I saw how many genres that you write, that was kind of intriguing to me. So can you tell us what made you decide to publish in multi-genres, and what's your favorite, if you have one?
Sure. Well, which path to choose has always been a dilemma for me. As far back as college, back when I was finishing my bachelor's degree in English Lit, and at the time I looked into MFA programs, and I was trying to decide which path was best, and none of my professors would advise me. At that time, I was the first student at Marywood University to win first place in two categories of the Lambda Iota Tau Honor Society, and that's the English Honor Society, one for creative nonfiction and one for fiction. And those went on to the national level. And at the same time, I also had several poems published in literary magazines. So I really had three choices before me and just couldn't decide. One of my college professors said, "Deborah, whatever you decide, you must write and you must keep on writing." So I opted to write rather than to pursue an MFA, and I wrote whatever called to me the loudest. Then when my first romance novel came out in 2008, advice in the industry was to pick one genre and stick with it. And at first I tried that with my Western, but sticking to one thing slowed my writing to a crawl. So I started writing on the side with a, "this one is for you and this one is for me" kind of attitude, just to be a happy writer and to keep the stories coming. I could never be happy writing only one thing because it's too limiting for me, and my creativity doesn't flourish beneath that kind of limit. So now that I have my own publishing company, I don't have to limit myself that way. Trying to pick one favorite genre for me is like trying to decide which cookie I want most, and that can change depending on what day it is, but I always like hope and happy endings no matter what I'm writing.
So that, I mean, that kind of becomes your brand no matter what. You know, you know that, you know, readers know if they're going to pick up your book, whether it's going to be a Western or it's going to be a contemporary, whatever it's going to be, that it's going to have romance, there's going to have hope, and there's going to have happy endings. So it's still,
yeah.
I mean, still people still get what you're writing. They still have those elements. And I guess that's really kind of what a brand is the promise to readers that certain elements will always be present. So it's almost like multi-genre, especially in this day and age. You know, in 2008, maybe it was a little more strict, and maybe traditional publishing, you know, they like to have you stay in one genre, although I see lots of traditional authors kind of expanding. But I think as long as you have a strong brand, that you can write whatever you want. Do you feel like that's true?
I do. I feel like that's true now. Back in 2008, they wouldn't touch my 1920s stories with they wouldn't even talk about it. But that's not the case now. I'm seeing other authors are putting out 1920s stories. So A lot of things have opened up now, and it's a wonderful that we're able to write stories that we really are moved to write, because that's where the good writing comes out of.
Absolutely. You know, you always, and they always say that, you know, write the book of your heart, write the book that you want to read. Well, if you like to read a lot of different things, probably other people like to read a lot of different things too. So,
exactly.
You know, I think that this is, I actually find this to be very progressive, what you're doing. I really do. You know, I think that you know, people do just want a particular kind of promise, a particular kind of brand, that happy ever after. You know, if you're going to pick up a romance, especially for people who like any kind of romance readers, as you probably know, like all different kinds of romance, every subgenre that you can, you know, that you can fit a romance into. And to me, it's more like, you know, you're making sure that you are covering a multitude of different types of readers, as long as that promise of happy ever after exists. And I think that's actually, you know, it's like that saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I think diversification, I think that's brilliant. I think that's a really great way to go.
Well,
now, you were
talking
about, you know, your favorites before I went off on a tangent on you. So, you know, you have, you had shared some favorites with me. You have, your favorites are Dark Chocolate, Visiting the Beach or Ocean, and Hearing from Readers. In fact, you equate receiving each card, letter, and email like finding a perfect shell upon the beach. Was there ever a time when you've had a not-so-positive message? And if so, how did you handle it?
Oh, yes. I've had snarky reviews, and those are one stars that I think we all get eventually. And even snarky private messages. But I make it my practice to give very little time and attention to those things. And I had good training for that. After we moved to Tennessee 20 years ago, I was working at the Collierville Herald selling advertising, and my job was to bring in brand new clients. I had no territory and no client base to start with, so in order to get to the yeses that I needed, I had to move through a lot of no's. And I didn't have time to focus on those no's. So when I started sending my stories out, back before indies and self-publishing, I got a lot of rejection letters. But I didn't save them in a drawer or anything like that, because I wanted them out of my house. I didn't want to hang on to negativity like that. So I would read it once, and I would react, because I'm human. And then I'd read it one more time to see if I could learn anything that might be useful. And if the answer was no, then I put it straight into the shredder. And so we don't get rejection letters in the mail anymore. But when I get something negative online or any other direction, I pretty much go through that same process in my mind. And then I'll hit delete, or if it's a review, I just will ignore it from that point on, because I'd much rather focus on happy things.
Well, seeing your, I think it's that's really interesting, because you've kind of, you can see that your brand is really the way you live your life. You know, you have all that diversity and adversity in your life, and you just want to get into the happy ending. And I love that. And I think that's a great lesson to walk away from. You know, people who are listening to this, you know, it doesn't matter if you're an aspiring author, or, you know, you're wanting to work retail, whatever that is. Sometimes you get the job, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get the job and the job wasn't what you liked. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to be happy. And I totally agree with you. You know, you want to have joy in your life. So if it doesn't give you joy, get rid of it.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Now, so you live just outside Memphis, Tennessee, and have met some interesting people. Tell us about your critique group and some of those celebrity ties you have.
Okay. Yes, I used to be in a critique group with Beecher Smith, who was Elvis's estate attorney, and the Robin Williams sister-in-law, Pat, hosted the meeting. And she had some lively parrots, which kept things fun and interesting. My first novel, A Desperate Journey, was written while I was in that group, and it was a wonderful way to start writing a novel because they were all very supportive and encouraging. And not many people know this, but Beatrice Smith actually published my first short story, Vampire from Memphis, in an anthology called More Monsters from Memphis. I'm not sure if it's still in, but you might be able to find a copy floating around here and there. And it was supposed to be a horror anthology, but he said, you know, Deborah, you have a lot of romance in that story. And that was a clue that everything I write turns into romance, no matter what it starts out as. The story was up for a Darrell Award that year, and I even had a TV interview and a radio interview, which was kind of sudden for having a first story in print, you know, just a little short story. Oh. It's like, wow.
Wow. That's big. A little short story and all of a sudden you're on TV. That's amazing.
Right.
Now, for those of you just turning in, I'm speaking with the very talented author, Deborah Parmley, and we're talking about her latest novel, which is titled Checkout. Now, Deborah, you write full-time, you run your own publishing company, Bello Dia Publishing. Can your listeners, kind of make you decide? Did your listeners try to you know, get you to decide to start your own publishing company? Just kind of wondering, you know, that's not something that you commonly see, and you know, I think people would like to know a little bit more about you starting your own company and. You know, what are some things that you might be looking for in a manuscript?
Yes, all right. Well, I was with five publishers, and of the five that I was with, two were closing their doors. And then one book was coming off contract, and one publisher was not paying. So I decided to negotiate for my rights back from all of them. And once I'd done that, I thought, hey, I have all these backlist books. They've already been edited, and if I'm going to self-publish, now's the time. So then I decided to start my own publishing company, starting with my backlist books, and I did that in 2015 and 2016. And now that the backlist books are out, except for a change of scenery because I'm doubling the length and turning that one into a series, I like having the control to create the series and not having to wait for permission. And I also have a 1920s young adult series, Butterflies Fly Free, about flappers, and also a futuristic series. And both series are launching from books that were previously published. I'm just now moving into publishing new work. Checkout is my newest book out, and I recently published Checkout in audiobook. And that's the first audiobook I've had, so I'm super excited about that. And I'm also excited to have Circle of Seven producing the book trailer for Checkout, which you'll be able to share soon. Now that I'm wearing my publisher's hat, I see things more from a publisher's point of view and have more things to take into consideration. Publishing a book is a gamble, whether it will earn out the cost of creating it and putting it out there. And so I watch sales figures very close to figure out what my readers do and don't want more of. This year at Bello Dia Publishing, we published a book co-written by me and Robert Arrow. So at this point, there are just two authors published in-house. And it was the first new book I published after my backlist book. So straight out of the gate, I was trying something new. I intend to keep Bello Dia small and strong, so it's more of a boutique publishing house and close to submissions for this first year, except by invitation. And when I do take on another author, I'll be looking at projects where we work as a team. So it's a little different here. I'm looking at the possibility of putting out a box set or two in 2017 once the other projects are well underway. And I wanted to tell you about the name of the company. I chose the name Bello Dia Publishing because Bello Dia is Portuguese for beautiful day and goes along with a saying that I'm known for. Friends will often hear me say, every day we are alive is a beautiful day. And Bello Dia books celebrate that. So like a sun or a moon rising, the books will spread light and will in some way connect to that overall theme.
I like that. I'm glad that, you know, I did wonder what that meant. So I'm glad that you included that. I think that's wonderful. Now, before we get wrapped up in hearing more from author Deborah Parmley, I'd like to let listeners know that our live chat session is open, and I see that we've got a couple of guests that are coming in and out. You're welcome to comment or ask a question there, or you can even call us, 646-200-4071. After the live show, I'll post the podcast and recap the blog at readersentertainment.com. For those listeners that want to learn more about Deborah as we're chatting with her, you can check out her website at www.deborahparmley.com. And that Deborah is D-E-B-R-A, and Parmley is P-A-R-M as in Mary, L-E-Y, so deborahparmley.com. Of course, we'll have links up on the blog as well. Deborah, you and I both are both talk show hosts with Readers Entertainment. Can you let listeners know more about your show, when it airs, and how you got started?
Sure. Yes, I'm the host of Book Life, where we shine a light on good books every Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern. It's a quick 15-minute show where we shine a spotlight on the latest books and learn a little bit about the author. And you can find us on Readers Entertainment Blog Talk Radio. It is so much fun doing the show. I really enjoy it. And I have to say thank you to Mary Everett for pointing me to the opportunity. I was getting ready to head to Knoxville for a reader-author event, and so I was busy packing and hadn't been looking online. And she texted me asking if I'd seen the job posting on Facebook, and I hadn't. But I went to find it so I could reply before I got on the road. So I want to thank her real quick for that. Mary Everett, thank you so much.
Love Mary. Mary's great.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Many readers and authors, they still remember my Make Believe Mondays interviews, which posted on my blog from 2006 to 2010, where I interviewed authors. And they also know me for the Cover Model Corner interviews, which I've done for several years now, some of which are picked up by Affaire Decor magazine. So I was already comfortable doing interviews, and I was excited about stretching a little bit more and learning to do them live on air. It has been great fun, and I love to mix things up with different genres and guests, from New York Times bestsellers to the smaller indie authors. I just love shining a light on good books, and that is what we do at Book Life.
I love it, and I've listened to many of your interviews, and they're quick to the heart. You know, they're really interesting. You ask some questions that are different, and you have such a variety of people that you have on your show. So, you know, hopefully people will try Book Life. It's definitely real fun. I'll make sure that I put a link up so that people can find out how to listen to your Book Life. Now, you're the founder of, I love this, you're the founder of Shimmy Mob Memphis. Tell us, what's that about and why you started it?
All right. Shimmy Mob is an international event held around the world on National Belly Dance Day to raise for our local domestic abuse shelters and to raise awareness of the cause. We dance to the same music, doing the same choreography, and wearing the same T-shirt. I had retired from belly dancing when I saw the call had gone out the first year and realized no one from Memphis had signed the city up. And with such a large metropolitan area and so many dancers, I thought, oh, hey, somebody needs to do this. So I signed up Memphis and began to build a team. And it was the one thing that could have pulled me from retirement. I'm very proud to be the founder of Shimmy Mob Memphis and so proud of my dance sisters here and around the world. I guess I could sum up the why with four words. Babies with broken bones. I do not wish to live in a world where babies have broken bones because of abuse. That is simply not acceptable to me. And this is one way I can do something about it. It's exciting to see Shimmy Mob grow every year with more cities as it spreads around the world. And I always get goosebumps on dance day when we dance as I know we're uniting with Sand Sisters all around the world.
I love that. You know, I took belly dancing. Mine was belly dancing, and you had to be size 14 or up, which I thought was very interesting. But I loved it. I loved it, and it's such great exercise.
It's amazing exercise. It's great fun.
So we know a few of your favorite things, but what's one thing you have to have while writing and why?
Oh, now you want to know my writing secret. Okay. Well, I'll tell you this one. I like to write with my shoes off. And sometimes it just flows better. And if it's warm enough to be barefoot, all the better.
Oh, I love it. You know, that's funny because anytime I come home, the first thing, I mean the very first thing I do, I kick those shoes off. Those shoes come off.
Yeah, exactly. So
I love it. I love it. And now, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with author and fellow radio talk show host Deborah Parmley about her latest military romance called Checkout. Deborah, with so many balls juggling, irons in the fire, and stuff on your plate, how do you find the time to, you know, just to kind of unplug and relax?
To be honest, I'm not so good at unplugging and being still and quiet. I'm fidgety like a two-year-old in body and mind if I try to be still. Picture a two-year-old who can't stay still and take a nap, and that's pretty much me. It drives my husband nuts. When I make time for it, yoga helps with that, and I like to go camping and turn off the phone, but it's been a couple years since I did that. And going to the beach instantly quiets and calms me. It's kind of like magic. That's where my soul is most at home, when I'm near the sea.
Oh, see, I'm telling you, I think we were sisters in another life. I love the ocean. I would live right on the ocean if I could.
Yeah.
So what's one thing about being an author you didn't bargain for?
Well, being treated like a celebrity when that happens, because I'm always just me and my mind. I find napkins in restaurants, and I even find a man's white undershirt while he was wearing it as a book signing. So there's just a few examples. And I still get that who me feeling when it happens, and maybe I always will as I've been at this for a few years. And when I hear a reader has traveled a long way to meet me at a luncheon or a signing, that always blows my mind. I feel very honored that they choose to spend their time and money that way. And I really do treasure the cards and letters I receive. They go into this special treasure box that my sister has made for me, along with some of the seashells that I collected. So those are my treasures.
I love it. Now, we've only got like a minute and a half, and I'm going to try and sneak in a couple of things. Can you give us a sneak peek into your next novel?
Oh, yes. My newest story that I'm working on right now is Dancing Butterfly, book two in my 1920s Butterfly Flight Free series, and that Suki story who you meet in Trapping the Butterfly. Each book in the series is about a different flapper, and they're connected, but you can read them as a standalone. Now, Suki's a dancer, and she's the mom of one of the strongmen in Al Capone's gang, and it's their love story. She's more like Rizzo in Grease, where Bethany, the flapper in book one, is more like Sandy. So Suki's great fun to write.
I love it. Now, I just want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're running out of time. It's been a pleasure. I do want to go ahead and invite listeners to check out the blog, readersentertainment.com. It should be up later tonight, first thing in the morning. I'll have lots of links there. Don't worry, I'll make sure that we link to Deborah's website, her social media, and her books. And again, Deborah, thank you so much. I've had such a great evening with you.
Oh, thank you for interviewing me, Sheila. I've had so much fun coming on the show.
And thank you to everyone who's tuned in. Lisa Watson will be back next next Thursday. And happy reading, everyone. Thanks.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.